Good evening, everybody. The Taft-Hartley labor bill is now the law of the land. President Truman has received a vigorous rebuke from the People's Congress. By a vote of 68 to 25, the Senate has followed the House in overriding the president's ill-tempered veto of the Taft-Hartley labor bill. That is almost three-fourths of those senators who voted on the bill today. It is six votes more than the necessary two-thirds. Following the 4-1 vote in the House, it shows the president's failure to win support in either House or Senate by his exaggerated arguments against the bill. But not only the president has been rebuked, labor union leaders spent millions of dollars collected from American workers in their vain effort to defeat this bill. They put on one of the greatest pressure campaigns in our legislative history. They flooded the president and Congress with mail and telegrams. It is a satisfaction to record that this kind of organized propaganda appears to have lost much of its force. Congress now knows how much and how little it means. It changed no votes. The chief purpose of the new law is to offset the lopsided provisions of the 12-year-old Wagner Act. This gave labor leaders enormous new power without imposing any new responsibility. The labor bosses still have enormous power, but at least they have now been given some offsetting responsibilities. Both proponents and opponents will take the new labor law into the 1948 presidential election campaign. By that time, we will know a little more about how it is going to work. One thing is certain, it will not produce the unhappy results predicted for it by whoever it was that shaped up the president's veto message. 20 Democrats and 48 Republicans voted today to override the president. 22 Democrats and 3 Republicans voted to sustain the veto. That shows an almost equal division of Democratic senators. It is not a happy augury for Democratic success in 48. Senator Sparkman of Alabama and Democratic Whip Scott Lucas of Illinois were the only Democrats who previously voted for the bill who switched to support the chief executive. They did it because they are good Democratic Party wheel horses, not because the president gave them a White House lunch last week. Mr. Truman made another futile last-minute appeal in a letter to Democratic leader Barkley of Kentucky. This was read to the Senate shortly before the final roll call began at 3 p.m. "This is a critical period in our history," President Truman wrote, "and any measure which will adversely affect our national unity will render a distinct disservice not only to this nation, but to the world." Perhaps it would not be unfair to remind the president that his veto message certainly affected our national unity adversely and in that respect rendered a disservice. Senator Robert Taft, Ohio Republican and co-sponsor of the labor bill, emerges with fresh laurels from the contest with the president. He has become much more likely as a Republican nominee to run against Mr. Truman next year. He told the Senate today that the Republican Party would fail in its duty to the voters if it failed to enact the labor bill. Now that the tumult and the shouting are over, it is well for all of us to take a sober look at the new legislation. It does not destroy labor unions. It will not end strikes. For some time to come, it will produce only minor changes in labor management relations. Some of its provisions don't go into effect for 60 days. Others do not apply until current labor contracts have expired. Some will remain in suspense until the courts have decided just what they mean, and on certain provisions that may take years. Every major provision of the new statute will have to be interpreted. Those who administer the law will have to say what they think it means. General Counsel Gerhard Van Arkel of the National Labor Relations Board has already resigned because he doesn't like what he thinks the new law means. This is all to the good. Every law needs sympathetic administration if it is to work. If the unions or employers disagree with the law's administrators, they will appeal to the courts. Thus, months will pass before the new law brings about decisive changes. And when all is said and done, the net effect will be much smaller than today's hullabaloo would lead you to suppose. That's why President Truman used bad judgment in his completely negative attitude towards the new labor law. It will be the president's duty to administer the new law. Everything he does in connection with it will now be suspect. His appointments of new administrators will be closely scrutinized. If he picks men who will try to play along with the labor unions at the expense of the employers, they will not be confirmed. If he refused to accept the opportunities which the new bill provides, a vigilant Congress will note that fact and take action. Whatever good feeling remained between the executive and two-thirds of the Congress has been dissipated by the labor bill veto. The tone in which the veto was written, the fact that it was so largely based upon a one-sided CIO legal brief, the complete condemnation of every aspect of a carefully thought-out and worked-out piece of legislation have all embittered the men who spent months preparing the new law. Senator Ives of New York has already expressed his fear that a definite attempt to sabotage the new law is already underway. Senator Moss, who opposed the bill, predicts that organized labor is going to dig in on a united front to prevent application of the law. No one who has read the new bill would call it a clear or simple piece of legislation. It embodies too many compromises on involved legal points. It contains too many tautologous legal languages which only the courts can construe. Neither the president nor anyone else now knows what the effect of some of the law's provisions will be. First, the administrators, and in the final instance, the courts, must pass on the measure's phraseology before its effect will be known. And as we know from the Lee bill today, a lower court says it's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court today says it's constitutional. The general public has many misconceptions concerning this Taft-Hartley law. It certainly will not end strikes because it does not forbid strikes. That is up to the unions. The law tries to prevent certain kinds of strikes, such as jurisdictional strikes and wildcat strikes. It is possible that clever union lawyers will find ways of getting round the anti-strike provisions. It's certainly true that John Lewis can pull a coal strike in spite of the bill. His men need only to prolong the vacation, which begins this week, and to maintain that they won't go back to work until the mines are absolutely safe. Since mines will never be absolutely safe, they could remain away from work for a very long time. United mine workers in 14 mines near Birmingham, Alabama, quit work today when they learned the result of the Senate vote. The walkout appears to have been prearranged. It is true that employers have now regained some of the rights they lost under the Wagner Act. They can tell their workers how they feel about the labor union policy in their plants. But they are still not allowed to voice any threats or make any promise of rewards for joining or not joining a labor union. On its face, the closed shop is now illegal. But there are a number of states in which closed shops have long been illegal and where they continue to exist. If the employer and the union agree that both want a closed shop it will be. But the unions will not find it so easy to force a closed shop on an unwilling employer. In any case, the union shop provides every necessary protection for the labor union, and that continues to be legal. Under the union shop, every person hired by the employer must join the union or lose his job. It is not true, as some have said, that foremen may no longer join labor unions. They can have their own unions, but they must not be the same unions as those of the workers whom they supervise. And the employer is not compelled by law to deal with the foreman's union, nor are the members of that union compelled to negotiate with him. They can go on strike and stay on strike as long as they please, but the employer has the right to hire other foremen to take their place. Nor is it true to say that the check-off of labor union dues is prevented under the new law. The only restriction is that a man must personally ask to have union dues deducted from his pay. In his veto message, the president went to great lengths to condemn the provision for a waiting period before a strike, which prejudices public health or safety, can be called. Actually, such a waiting period makes little difference in the long run. It postpones a strike but does not prevent it. It is possible that the new law will eliminate the most flagrant cases of feather-bedding. Hereafter, union boss Petrillo may not be able to force radio stations to hire musicians they do not want or need. If the Taft-Hartley law does not suffice, the Lee Act, which was upheld today by the Supreme Court, will help control this particular labor czar. But it is safe to predict that the still powerful labor union bosses will continue to find plenty of ways to reduce the amount of work done by union members. In the building trades, this has become a scandal, The new law is powerless to change union rules. From now on, labor unions will have to be more careful about spending funds for political purposes. Here, too, there will be some evasion. Certainly, the president's fear that a legitimate labor newspaper will not be able to discuss politics is unfounded. That was one of the several red herrings provided by labor union lawyers which found their way into the Truman veto message. This new labor law is not an end, but a new beginning. The Wagner Act was a necessary first step. It was needed to correct abuses by employers. The Taft-Hartley Act is a necessary second step. It was needed to correct abuses by labor unions. We must now move forward in an attempt to consolidate both measures in such a way as to be fair to both labor and management. If we could count on goodwill from the administration and a fair interpretation of both acts, progress would not be difficult. Unfortunately, the president, by the bad temper of his veto, has handicapped a cooperative start. We can only hope that the passage of time will show him to have been wrong about many features of the new law. Those employers and those labor leaders who will make an honest effort to cooperate within this new law will have a much better chance to achieve labor peace in the decade that lies ahead than they have had since the Wagner Act became law in 1935. It all depends on the spirit in which the law is administered and interpreted. Good night.